All right, Kiss Army, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. Thank you for giving us your time today and letting us into your head. I hope we don't do any damage. We're just a bunch of Kiss fans, and we talk Kiss. So come along for the ride. You've got nothing to lose.
All right, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. Apologies for the countdown timer going while I suddenly realized that I did not set the intro video to the episode after recording the hooligans the other day. So that's the technology I deal with on a weekly basis. We've got Marcus Almighty, Daniel Weiss, and 69th Blizzard joining us today. I want to thank everyone who's taking the time to join us live. Let me just make sure I post in the messages. Welcome to the show as well. All right, there we go. I'm now on track. So it's been a busy week. It's going to be a very busy week next week. It's going to be a very interesting weekend. I'm wondering how many people I'm going to ban on the message board for being unable to separate politics from KISS with the Kennedy Center honors. My ban hammer is ready. I've got one in each hand. I will whack a mole for people who can't. But just try and celebrate the moment of what's going to be occurring this weekend. The band that we profess to love is being honored. Leave it at that. Leave everything. All the other shit is static. We get 24/7 breaking news cycles. Do we really need it to invade every crevice of our anuses? No, we don't. So what's going on this week on the board is the Hooligans. Check out that episode I did midweek with Al and Vincent from the Hooligans. They've got a tribute album out now, and I really enjoyed listening to the album. I don't get a lot of time to do that, but I kept those guys waiting for so long that I really felt honor bound to get them on the show, because the music really justifies it and the attention to detail that they put into it. So check out the episode. They'll tell you all about it, including some of the technical things that went into the creation of the art. There was also another video, and I got to check my notes on that. Oh yeah, Thayer St. James. So yeah, I bought the EP. I did a review. So see what I thought of Tommy releasing new music in 2025 with his longtime best friend, Jamie St. James. I actually thought it was pretty successful. It's better than quite a bit of the Black and Blue catalog, in my opinion. We'll see if I can get these guys to do a top 10 Black and Blue episode, which might be interesting. Hey, why the hell not? What other news? Mailroom. I got shit this week. What about you guys? Because I had a happy little delivery from Japan. My copy Japan, Alain's new publication came in along with, it's always, I always have a problem with these fucking lights, cameras, with the fanzine as well. So very excited about that. It looks fantastic as always. It's got attention to detail and it's chock full of the glorious Japanese vinyl story. And that's, again, I had him on the show to talk about the project, so check out that episode. But also, if you are interested in his publications, it's kissontour74-.com. So do check that out. Anyone else get anything this week, Ken?
Ken maybe got something.
I did not get anything. Not this week.
Saving his mind.
I'm waiting for that magazine. But not KISS-related. I got myself some Zappa, but neither here nor there. But
no one cares about Zappa.
Lots of people care about Zappa, but not on this channel.
That's true.
Zappa.
I just like to add that I know that both Julian and Ken are waiting for the Kiss Destroyer magazine. It's well worth waiting for, because I got mine a few weeks back. And a little bit of news, the Kiss FAQ podcast is about to get an article into the next issue. We're being featured as the Kiss pod for the next issue. So if you haven't started your subscription to the Swedish magazine, do that now, and you'll get a nice read next time around when there's a thing about this podcast.
Yeah, and they're powerful and attractive guys who put out very, very good quality stuff. I've seen enough of their articles over the years. It's really a no-brainer. So I hope they're able to take this project as far as they want to. What else is going on? Well, I think let's just cover this one straight up. Ace Frehley, pop-up vinyl. This was a deal that was signed with the record label in June or July, so it predates Ace's passing. So they're not jumping on a bandwagon in some distasteful manner, which is why I don't mind advertising this. Again, it's pop-up, which I think is pretty cool. I'd never thought about that, Mark.
No.
Seen this for other groups doing kind of the pop-up cover like we had as children in our picture books?
I've seen it once or twice from some other. I know Jethro Tull did something like that once before.
Yeah, they have.
But I haven't seen too many bands do it. It's not a very common thing to see on a vinyl thing. But I mean, don't forget, vinyl only came back in strong form over the last 15 years now, right? So before, nobody was doing it, obviously.
Well, it's a very cool concept, and they've got multiple freaking versions.
Of course.
I don't know where this company is. I think they may be Dutch. Correct me in the audience if you know for sure where it should be. So some of them are already sold out. Let me just see which ones.
The liquid ones are sold out.
Okay. Liquid blue and red, which were 25 copies. Those are gone, but those are 200 euros.
25.
Liquid blue and green is gone again. 25 copies, and the purple pink blue is gone. Gone is the splatter. And then you've just got what I think are idiotic choices. I absolutely go bonkers when they do purple, blue,
and
obviously
red.
The Kiss Aura colors. It's just so contrived. To my taste. But again, opinions vary on that.
I'd rather that than a liquid one.
Well,
the liquid one seems so stupid. Like, what was the point of having a liquid record?
Like, that's gold filled.
Not going to do anything. Like it's
silver.
Just...
Where's the silver one?
Yeah. At least his colors would be nice,
Well, do the math, Mark. 25 times 200 euros times 3.
But that's the only. I mean, that's the only reason to do it. I mean, like just because
they're not serious product. It's not going to be pitched as audiophile. It strictly is eye candy. But again, what is the point of having that eye candy unless you've got maybe a black lit, album frame where you could put it up and it could be like a modern lava lamp, especially
like did you guys see in the record store they put out that that Stone Satanic that album here?
Yes, on the Zoetrope.
Yeah, and they have this thing where you have to all these instructions in the back. Put a black light on here and do this. Like, who's gonna go and do that? Really, I mean, unless you're really new to the whole collecting thing, you're really excited about it. Yeah, you might go out and do all that stuff, but really, no one's gonna go and grab black lights and do all this stuff. Like,
you don't need a black light. There's like an app that you can use and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so
I'm just saying.
I have a couple of Zoetropes.
Yeah, I mean, they're cool in that way, but really,
yeah. I think the pop up thing was cool because I talked about it on our podcast earlier this year or a year ago or something. I said the Kiss should do a pop up, especially. You know what? This is for is it Tom who does the designing of the
Tom Germain. Yes.
Tom Germain, yeah. Tom, if you're watching, this is just a request. This is something I thought about a long time ago. I would love a pop-up when 1977 comes around for Kiss Alive 2, that when you open the gatefold, that you have a pop-up of that they pop up where they're like the on stage there, with the fire pops up there on the side too, and them on their pedestals or whatever you want to call them, lifts. That was something I loved those pop-up things when I was a kid. I had the books like one of these things to the moon, Apollo to the moon, the rockets, and you had all this stuff going on. You can move these little sliders and stuff. I was easily entertained.
Ken, it's a great idea. The only thing I think is how much engineering would it take to do it, number one, because you have to do a certain design to do it, like to make those kind of things work.
I don't think it's that difficult.
I know, Ken, but I'm just saying that time is money. These guys are not going to
just
spend
hours
on that.
Charge me another 20, 25 cents.
Great idea, Ken. I like that.
That's actually, Todd in the audience is saying, waiting for the 50th Destroyer pop-up vinyl edition. That would actually be an interesting you know, if they're going to want to celebrate Destroyer in its own right again for its 50th, then what about with them?
Yeah, what are they going to do for that?
That great pose of them on the little mountain of rubble popping up.
That would make sense.
That would actually be kind of neat. Would I buy it? No, but I'd certainly like to see pictures of it for free.
I just have to comment on that Ace Frehley record. I think it looks great. I think it's probably my favorite Ace Frehley record post Kiss. You know, I think it's a great record. So it's good that they do something with it. It's underrated. There's lots of good stuff. And if you're into Richie Scarlett, you get your chunk of Richie Scarlett when he was on top of his game. So it's a great collaboration between Richie and Ace, and what a great record. Unfortunately, it didn't do much back in the day, but it's a solid record. I actually listened to it not so long ago, and it still rocks. So if you're into Kiss and Ace and don't have that record, go and get it. It's a great record.
Yeah, it's a good album.
Yeah, without a doubt, that's one of my favorite sections in Aceland as well, going behind Trouble Walking, Second Sighting, and the Frehley's Comet album. So we shall see that project. What's up next? All right. So like I said at the top of this show, this weekend is the Kennedy Center Honors. We've heard a little bit out of the peanut gallery about things that may be happening. Gene flapped his gums and talked about Garth Brooks doing Shout It Out Loud. I think Nuno Betancourt has now been mentioned as well. I can't think of too many better guitarists. I mean, the guys who I would have put on a short list to be part of a tribute band for the Kennedy Center were John Five and Charlie Benante. Those would be my picks as working musicians of stature who have all the credibility needed, both musically and in terms of their fan connection with the music, to properly honor Kiss as the whole, not just Ace, not just Peter, not just Gene, not just Paul, but Kiss. But thinking about two questions for everyone. Is what number one, what are your expectations for this weekend? And I know it's going to be tough to straddle that line of staying away from the politics, especially with the World Cup draw having taken place yesterday and seeing how politics inevitably gets dragged into absolutely everything in this world. But let's do our damnedest to keep that out, get the bug spray if necessary. But also, what would you really, I mean, we did talk about the honors, but now that we're further down the road without Ace being with us, other than in spirit, what would you really, really like to see this weekend? So, Daniel, why don't you get us started, as you probably don't care.
I haven't really thought about that since we spoke about it last time, you know, so the actual thing is this weekend, is it? The next weekend?
This weekend.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Well, tomorrow. Okay. I had actually forgotten about that. But what I wished for when I thought about it was, you know, there's no news about that over here. No reports or anything about it. So I actually forgot about that. But what I was hoping for was, of course, some of the top-notch bands covering some of Kiss's music. That's my main thing. I want to hear, you know, those bands that were so influenced by Kiss, and especially Ace Frehley, bands like Alice in Chains, maybe Stone Temple Pilots, Pearl Jam, stuff like that. That would be great. And then, of course, you need some sort of celebration in the name of Ace Frehley. You have to do something really good, you know, honoring him. And hopefully they get someone who is good, who has sort of a silver tongue and can, you know, say all the right things. I'm thinking about Tom Morello or Rob Zombie. Rob Zombie or Tom Morello, I'd like to see them. They are real Kiss fans. And they can speak well, you know, in front of an audience. So a great speech about Ace Frehley and some rocking bands. I guess that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, I'm going to go next because things are already happening in Washington around the event. I think the ceremony is actually today, but tomorrow night is the concert, which is the massive thing that'll be musically featured. I've been thinking, mainly because of some of the people we've spoken to in the last 10 days for the Ace Book, about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2014 and how it seems that Kiss never misses an opportunity to fuck something up.
Yeah.
And when I say Kiss, I'm speaking broadly. I'm not putting the blame on Gene and Paul or Doc specifically, because the issues always come from a variety of interests now that there are two members who control the narrative and two who don't. My hopes are that we managed to navigate the Kennedy Center without Kiss fucking this up in some way. And that means I don't see how it's possible for, if you stick a microphone in front of Gene Simmons' face, he's going to basically go rogue. That's his nature. Gene is Gene. Yeah. Paul is far more thoughtful. But I am concerned, very concerned, that there may be an agenda to utilize this press coverage and this focus in the same way that they did in 2023, nearly 2 years ago to the day. Now, before I set off one of our favorite posters, whinging about the final show again, using the press focus to jam the avatars down our throats even further, or to go off on tangents about life choices made 40 or 50 years ago. So my only hope is that we navigate one where we look at the three remaining members of the group on that broadcast or from photos that we see in advance, and we see a measure of peace on their faces, enjoying the moment together, celebrating the Kiss of 1972 to 80, which is the foundation on which all Kiss exists today. Thank you for this for coming to this TED Talk, Mark.
So what I'm expecting, I'm going in this with a different approach this time. Much like Daniel, I totally forgot that this was even happening, like this weekend. Because again, over here, there's been zero talk about it on the news here and stuff like that. They're not really talking too much about it, but I'm going in with it with a different approach, which is I'm having no expectations, because when you don't have any expectations, then you can't be disappointed. Okay. And usually with Kiss, I found that, you know, sometimes you hope for things. I mean, the main person I feel sorry for is Ken, my good friend, my buddy, you know, the person who I loved doing podcasts with together. I feel sorry for him because he always has this grandiose hope that, you know, Kiss is going to get together. And when they had Ace still was with us, you know, dreams of the reunion again and doing another this and that. And Ken is the man who always sees no wrong in Kiss, whereas I sort of always expect wrong in Kiss because they've always disappointed me numerous ways. Do I like them any less? No, I still, you know, support Kiss and, you know, talk about them to family and friends whenever possible. But I'm going in with this with a different approach. I'm not going to expect anything. I'm going to go in and much like Julian, I'm going to hope that they come out of this, you know, like that they approach it civilized. They go in, everything is under good spirits. You know, they're able to get some decent bands playing some stuff. They have a nice tribute to the guys. I'm sure they're going to do something about Ace. So that's going to be nice. And, you know, hopefully when they do something like that, they can keep it classy, because, you know, it's easy to, like you said, when you give Gene an opportunity to start talking unfiltered for a little while, then things can go down the crapper real quickly. Okay. So I hope that it's done in a good way, respectfully, classy. I mean, look, Kiss was that band that always seemed to get the short end of the straw a lot of the times in their career later on, like in the 80s and 90s, you know. There were a lot of things that didn't happen for them that maybe should have, right? So now that we're here and they're on their retirement, end of their career, let's make it go nicely for them. Let's hope it goes smoothly. Let's hope there's nothing that we're going to be talking about for the next 9 months and bringing up that something this happened or why didn't this happen. Let's just hope we all go in with a nice clean slate and hope that everything goes nicely.
Kumbaya. Ken?
Well, knowing that this is not going to air, I don't know if there's going to be videos or whatever, but this is not going to air on CBS TV station, whatever, until the 23rd of December this month. So it's going to air then, you know, the fully produced whatever, everything. So, though, having said that, yeah, I'm hoping everything is kind of, you know, they're distinguished. And the good thing I think about it is they can't do a lot of talking because when it's happening, or at least the performance part of it, they're sitting up in the upper seats, you know, in a section where all those people being honored, watching down on the stage, people playing their music, you know, for them. And it's supposed to be a surprise. Obviously, Garth Brooks, I guess, is not going to be a surprise, but these artists that are supposed to perform are supposed to be a surprise to them. I don't know how true that is or not. Maybe, maybe not. Obviously, Garth Brooks is not a surprise. If he's not there, then I'd be surprised that, oh, okay, Gene was wrong. But the other thing is, I think today at the White House, Kiss is supposed to make some kind of announcement.
Okay.
Of some sort. And I'm wondering what that is. If they're, that's what worries me. What this announcement will be. If they're trying to sell something or promote something, depending on what it is. Are they going to decide to do a tour? You know, of non makeup. You know,
reunion with Vinny.
With this stuff, yeah, reunion with Vinny or something like that, but. I don't know what this is going to be, or is it a selling point of something? I really don't want them to use this to sell something.
No.
If they're doing announcement to do good, like there's this, the Gene thing is Gene is going to speak, right? Regarding paying people, artists, for their music being played on the radio. Over the streams of radio and all that kind of stuff, that they should get paid and where they're not getting paid. So, I mean, I agree with that. It's not surprising that they got him to talk about this because he's, you know, the money guy. He wants the money. But, yeah, they should be fairly paid. If you're playing, you know, my music or they're playing Mark's music on the radio, I'm sure
money. There are mechanisms for paying it. Artists for music played on the radio.
Right. There should be
for the writers.
So, yeah. And I guess they're talking about the performers too, right? So, I don't know. We'll see what that happens with that. But anyway, I hope everyone gets along. They look like they're having fun, have a good time, enjoy how they can. Unfortunately, Ace is not going to be there, which is a downer, of course. But I just hope it all turns out well. And it's a good time to be remembered for the fans and for Kiss themselves.
Yeah, hopefully it is that celebration. Promotion. You know, I hope, again, a little bit of promotion I think is fair baseball because it's like, well, what are you up to in your life? Well, Peter has an album coming out. Gene says, you know, we're working on Avatars for 2027. But I don't think the focus of the conversations and the coverage should revolve around any of those particular singular projects.
No.
Being asked what's up in your life and honestly saying, well, I've got a new album coming out in 2 weeks. You know, that's fair. Say we're working on the Avatars. They're coming in 2027, you know, or anything else that's actively going on. The Kiss Alive box sets, etc. Or Gene even, you know, promoting the testimony he's going to give in front of, I don't know which house it is. I thought they're on vacation again. is going to be fine. But it's about the context. whether it becomes the dominating factor of that moment rather than the history of the band being celebrated. If the focus is turned into Doc McGee deliberately using this to promote all things Pop House and Kiss and to the denigration of Peter and Ace's memory, then that's a completely different matter. Musical celebration. I hope that any celebration or any memorial for Ace Frehley has been vetted and approved by his family. I severely hope that no one's thought, oh, this would be nice for them. I hope they've completely included the family in what they would like for Ace to be honored. So especially because they just generally don't do this for people who've passed away. For before the Kennedy Center honors. So again, context is everything, and tastefulness. This is Kiss.
Yes.
Kiss isn't exactly the most tasteful band to begin with. Come on,
that's why we love him.
Let's not be too delusional in our expectations. But I just don't want to be. It's going to be I hope they're not interviewed together, so that Gene and Paul just dominate the conversation as they always have, rightfully. In many cases, because they've been the leading parties who've done all the press throughout even the original era. They were the ones, in many cases, taking that load. I just don't want to see any of the four. These are four equal ingredients in the magic that created this group, regardless of what happened after. So, I'm a little bit, I'm jaded because I look back to Ace's speech at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where he had to remind Gene about addiction being an illness, not a choice.
Right.
And trying to get through to Gene. And now Gene's going to government to testify. But you know what? Gene's no Zappa. Gene's no Dee Snider. And just continuing to scrabble for every possible revenue stream. I'm a little bit split about that and what they're trying to do with radio, as if radio wasn't dead enough as it is. You know, everything is becoming an add-on at this point. You know, you just have nothing unless you own the physical product these days. So, we'll see how it goes. I can't wait to see how it goes. I'm really excited. I'm excited. Yeah, obviously I'm excited most for Peter, but that's Kiss being honored. My band, that's been a very important part of my life soundtrack. But again, I want to see all of them smiling, not any of them being forced to smile. Everyone drinks their flavor of Kool-Aid, and there is no wrong answer. Talking about Gene and Paul, what about Gene and Paul's sons?
Yeah.
Stanley Simmons have released their first single yesterday, Friday anyway, Body Down, which is, I guess, going to be a track off their forthcoming album. You know, we've listened to them through the little clips that they've shared here and there, and it's always been about the harmonies. So I don't think anyone can be particularly surprised that they've taken a more laid-back acoustic feel with the harmonies into presenting the music. And I'm not going to be covering them extensively on this channel because this is the Kiss FAQ podcast, but I think people are interested, as am I, by what the Sons are going to do musically, especially in a week that Paul's appeared on a show talking about nepotism. This appearance on the show, Stanley Simmons have earned. So who's listened to the song and what are your thoughts? Mark?
Everybody.
I actually listened to it a few times, and I put a pretty lengthy comment about it on the board under the Stanley Simmons Body Down thread there. I liked it. I'm going to be honest. I kind of dug it. Maybe they caught me at the right time of the day. It was in the morning. I was in good spirits, and maybe that helped. But I didn't find anything that really bothered me about it. I mean, I liked the percussion. I thought it was good. I thought the guitar solo was really, really nice in there. I love Hammond organ, so that also tickled my buttons there too when I heard that. The vocals were really good, and I mean they've been preparing us now for months with these little video clips that they've been doing of them harmonizing together in the kitchens and living rooms and all over the place. So we know that they're gonna be doing that. But I put one little comment here that I thought that kind of sums it up. I mean, sort of how Greta Van Fleet is the next generation's Led Zeppelin, Stanley Simmons may turn out to be the next generation's Crosby, Stills, and Nash, or the band. You know, that maybe that's their direction that they might want to go down. And, you know, people always, I always find that kind of funny where people complain about the Greta Van Fleet saying, oh, they're just a Zeppelin thing. And it sounds like Zeppelin. So what? I'd be happier if there was more music that sounded like Zeppelin out there than the crap that they're playing now out there. And I'd rather hear more stuff that was Crosby, Stills, and Nash, or even the band, than half the garbage that they're playing out now. You know, I mean, it's, they're just putting a, their own kind of, you know, spin on it. And from there, it'll develop into what we don't know. But they got, everybody has to start from somewhere. And I think that it's pretty decent, you know. I don't mind this sort of 70s tip of the hat. I mean, you know, because I love bands like Free, The Faces, Deep Purple, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I put here, I can't lie, I'm hoping to hear some more slightly more rocking songs, nothing ultra heavy, but keeping within the era they have sort of selected, you know, Free, The Faces, Deep Purple, and I dare say Kiss. So, you know, that's, I don't find anything wrong with it. It's a first record. We see what happens from there. If anything even happens after this, who knows? But I think the first single, I thought it was pretty good.
We'll be back with Kiss after this.
Oh, hey, you're still here, watching or listening. Why don't you hit that subscribe button or click the like one? And if you want even more, click on the join button on YouTube. Thanks for your support.
Yay, I got it right today. Ken, what about you?
That was good. Yeah, I mean, I enjoy that song. I think it's a good song. I would have maybe liked some change-ups, a little bit, some kind of more of a change-up in it. Yeah, it gets to some kind of area. I don't know if they would call it a bridge or not. Maybe it is a bridge, but maybe a better type bridge. I would rather have some kind of change-up because it kind of just goes and goes the same thing over and over pretty much, but I enjoyed it. I the guitar solo is great, you know, it was very nice. Harmonies, like you said, Mark, are fantastic. They're calling it, I guess, Americana,
yeah,
style, I guess, right? So yeah, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, that's what I get from it. A slight Zeppelin-y in a way, yeah. And you know,
the percussion reminds me of the band. Doesn't it remind you of that, Ken?
A little bit, yeah, the band. So, yeah, I enjoy. I think it's well produced, definitely well produced. And I like you. I like that Hammond organ. And that I noticed that right away at the beginning. Some other weird little sounds in there. I noticed too. I wasn't sure what they were. I almost sounded like water or something, but the. It was weird.
Some modern production.
Yeah, some kind of production technique. But I thought it's good. You know, I'm open to hearing more. And, you know, I don't think they're going to be a hard rocking. Maybe they will. I'd like to see them do something rock. But I don't know how hard would they get. I don't think they are if they're just going to do this type of music. So as long as the music is good and it's produced well and, you know, enjoyable, I'm sure I'll probably buy it if it's at least this good or better, you know.
Daniel.
I think the best thing about this is that Paul Stanley's and Gene Simmons, their sons, are friends. I think that's pretty cool that they can, you know, carry the torch, sort of the Simmons Stanley thing. That's cool for me. But when it comes to their music, I don't think it's for me. However, I do appreciate. I think they're good at what they're doing. Not my cup of tea. I actually prefer the thing he did for Bruce Kulick's BK3 back in 2010, maybe. He sang something on that record, Gene Simmons' son Nick, and I mean, to me, he sounded like a clone of Jim Morrison from The Doors. I think he was quite close to that way. And I love The Doors and Jim Morrison and the way he sounded like. So I would have wanted him to go down that road a bit, you know, the dirty rock sort of, more of that thing would be more titillating to me.
Titillating?
Yeah, it's a big word like gymnasium. Hard if it's your second language. Okay, so this is nothing for me, but I think it's cool that they can be friends and, you know, put stuff out. But, you know, I won't buy it. I won't listen to it. But I like the fact that they're friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, I listened to it once, and I'm not going to be listening to it again. I didn't hear any Deep Purple, though. I guess if you dig deep enough into Purple, you get back to Rod Evans before they really went in a different direction with Ian Gillan and later others. But I don't get that. I don't get any Free. I get the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young harmonizing and some of the softer stuff. I got the elements from the band America, Simon & Garfunkel. And that's the potpourri for my life soundtrack, I hear the parallels off with them. It's a nicely constructed. I mean, they're clearly still looking for the confounded bridge in rock and roll, because there ain't no bridge in that song. There are no hooks. It's just one. To me, it's one note. It's very nice harmonizing, and then it goes into the chorus, and then back to harmonizing, and then into a really good guitar solo, by the way, like the tone and sound of that. But it doesn't do anything to me. It's just saccharine. It's like, it's not oversweetened. It's just, for my tastes, bland. It's nice enough. I heard it in the elevator. I wouldn't jump out of the elevator. But I'm not going to rush out now when I hear that they've got a new single coming out. To hear it, I'm like, okay, I've heard it. You know, you go back and you listen to some of the stuff that they've done separately. You know, obviously Amber Wilde, Jupiter's Crush, some of the other things. You know, Evan can play, Evan can sing, Evan can frontman very, very well. The guy is very talented. He and Nick have been around each other all their lives, so it's kind of cool that now they do come together to see what they could do, especially judging by the response that they've had when they've shared clips of themselves just having fun with the harmonies. Mm-hmm. They're both strong. Nick's done some extremely good stuff with Symphera, sort of the electro pop atmospheric stuff.
Yeah, I like that stuff.
Yeah, that stuff actually appeals a lot more because it is so different and it's so ambient. And as someone who likes Jean-Michel Jarre, you know, to have some of that electronica going with a vocal, you know, is also kind of neat. So bring them together, and then they're doing something that, to me, doesn't seem very original. Not that any music is wholly original. It just didn't do anything for me. And, yeah, I guess I'll hear something else when it comes out, but I'm not going to rush to it. But structurally, I don't think I'm the target audience for this. I listen to the Rolling Stones all frickin' day. You know, I listen to Kiss. What was I listening to all day yesterday? The morning playlist was Foo Fighters, Wasting Light, Saint Cecilia. And the afternoon playlist was Helloween, Keeper of the Seven Keys, 1 and 2. So I'm not the right audience.
That's the perfect point, though, that you bring up, Julian, is that you have to remember that, too, is that I guarantee you they're not strategically looking for people like that, like you, like that sort of are stuck back in the, you know, I love new music. I still look for new bands and new stuff all the time. I don't consider myself stuck back in the past musically. While I love a lot of the bands that are back there and I still listen to them, but I tried to still, but mainly because I'm going to be honest here, mainly because I, as a person who records and does music, I like to hear the latest production stuff and the new sounds that they make and kind of try to get myself up to date on what's happening. Will I write music like that? Probably not. But I mean, I'd like to know what are the current sounds, what's popular in that sense, just to know it from an engineering point of view or a production point of view. But I still love listening for new bands and for new music. And when a band puts out a new album, I still get excited about it. I mean, even bands that have been around for years, I hope sometimes that they make new music, because as a songwriter, I love writing songs. To me, that's the main reason to be a musician, is to write new stuff, not to just, you know, not express to sit yourself on the old stuff, you know.
Yeah, I think, and then Aerosmith, but, something with the Young Blood.
Yeah, you know, that's just a sellout. That's just a sellout. It's a sellout. Sellout. Yeah, what you said there. Yeah, Mark, what you said there is really interesting. But I have to say, I thought I was into new music. I thought I tried to keep, you know, an open mind. Then I got my Wrapped, you know, when you listen to Spotify.
Spotify.
At the end of the year, you get a rap of all the stuff you listen to. And it's the same as the previous year. It's number one is the Rambo soundtrack theme. Number two, Dances with Wolves theme. Wow. And so on. So I guess I'm not into new music when it comes to it.
I'll have to check out mine because I've listened
to it. You have to do that. It's really interesting. Yeah,
no, I listened to Living in America.
Rocky Four
this year. Yeah, that's love that song. One.
I love it too
as well. So yeah.
That's great.
Where were we? We got everyone on there on Body Down, right?
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, Mark, at least it is new music, something new to listen to and something to discuss. I do agree on that point.
I thought we was talking about topics from the board.
We are, and that's what's next.
Okay. Great. I'm looking forward to this. It was such a long time ago we talked about topics from the board. There are some great topics on the board, you guys out there, so go and check it out.
I don't know. I saw some pretty crappy topics on the board. Too many polls. Don't need a poll about everything. But the first one was a poll, and it was the War of the Four box sets to date. Destroyer
That's
versus
smart.
Creatures versus Dress to Kill versus Alive. You decide. To this point, or up to this time, what is the box that rises above all others that to you is the greatest representation of what a box treatment should be, and is therefore your personal favorite? And Ken is not allowed to have any ties in this. You have to pick one.
Well,
Mark,
you want me to go first? Okay, so just a favorite or like rank it?
Just your favorite.
Okay, my favorite is the Dress to Kill one. That one for sure was the one that I've always was looking forward to. When it came out, I was not disappointed in the slightest. I really enjoyed that one.
Ken. I hate that evil laugh he does.
It's
like before he drops a tie.
I'm going to say Dress to Kill also. Okay. And it may be because it's kind of the latest flavor of the month kind of thing. It's so recent. Because maybe if Creatures came out now, I'd probably say Creatures, right? but I'm going to go Dress to Kill for the interesting couple songs that they, you know, we got unreleased stuff. And then the real part of it is the Kobo. That's what puts it over the top for me.
Okay.
The contents of it are cool. They've added some new different twists to the Chotskis or whatever. But I think it's really was well done.
Did we do this last week? Well, we'll do it again. See if our opinions have changed. Daniel.
Creatures of the Night by far. Because for me, it's all about the music, and I think that box set had the most interesting music with all those Penny Lane's demos, the Betrayed demo that no one knew about. The extended War Machine song is probably my favorite off that one. I still listen to that one. I had no idea they had that version. It sounds so, you know. It's not so untypical of Kiss to do something like that. A really long metal version of a song. I love that one. And there's all different takes of songs. I don't care about, you know, all the posters and, I don't know, stickers and ties.
Tchotchkes?
Yeah.
The tie.
Yeah, so when it comes to the music, I have to go with Creatures of the Night.
Yeah, same for me. Creatures of the Night for all the same reasons that Daniel just mentioned. I think the biggest surprise as a box so far has been Dress to Kill. Just that it was actually turned into a box is surprising enough.
Yeah.
But Creatures hits all the elements, and you know, had those shows not leaked prior, just imagine the surprise for most people who are hearing the live shows in soundboard quality that they never thought they'd hear, the extended versions, the work tapes from the studio, extended versions, different mixes. Again, it also just hit every single point. And I don't talk about the Shock Keys. It's all about the music. Just absolutely spectacular. Another topic from the board this week, and I actually did a solo topic on it, was why the dislike for Read My Body. So, Ken, Read My Body. Is it in the top half of your favorite Kiss songs or not?
No, but I kind of understand it. I think the first time I heard it, I enjoyed it. But then listening to it more, I didn't like it as much. I mean, it's okay song. It's not horrible. It's not horrible. It's obviously a Def Leppard type, you know, ripoff kind of tune. So, but it's okay. It's not as bad as people say. There's a lot worse out there as far as, Kiss songs. So I'm okay with it. Not my favorite, not my least favorite. It's just kind of in the middle.
You're basically describing it like it's a colonoscopy. It's not as bad as it could be. There's worse things out there. I mean, you're really not selling Read My Body as something to look for.30
don't go. To. Yeah, I don't go out and say, "Oh, I need to listen to Read My Body" or anything like that. No.
Yeah, yeah. It's not something to look forward to, Daniel.
I think the problem is the whole album. I think.
Yeah.
I think it's probably my least favorite Kiss album. You know, the previous album, Crazy Nights, it was, they put in the effort. They tried to sound like Def Leppard and all that. That was, you know, the flavor of the month. And they put their minds to it. Heart in the Shade is like a mishmash of, you know, leftovers, it feels like. And this is one of the leftovers. Maybe it could have been a better song if they put an effort in, but it feels lazy. It feels contrived. I kind of liked it. As Ken said, first time I heard Heart in the Shade, I thought, what the heck is this? But Read My Body was one of the songs that I actually, you know, remembered after listening to the record. I remembered the chorus. So the chorus isn't bad. And I actually, if I would rank the songs on Heart in the Shade, it wouldn't be the last one. There are at least four or five songs that are worse in my mind. So I think it's, middle of the road. Paul Stanley tries to do something, but they don't have the time or the money to make it sound great. So it's, middle of the road.
Yeah. All right, Mark.
I've never liked the song to begin with. I mean, I think Daniel kind of put on one of the reasons I think that's, and it's a great point that he brought up, is that it's the album in general is what kind of hurts it too, is because it just, it's sort of directionless. You know, like you have some songs here that use Drum Machine with no Eric Carr on it. Then you have some songs that do have him on it. Then you have some songs that are sort of, more rock, straight ahead rock, like, Rise to It and stuff like that. Or, and then you have, the ballad, which is fine. You know, every album tends to need a ballad. So they have that on there, but they just, it's like they put every kind of thing that they can think of on the record. And it kind of takes you on this really odd roller coaster ride, and not in a good way, you know? And then as soon as you get to something like that, Read My Body, you're like, whoa, okay, this is obviously their tip of the hat to Def Leppard and that sort of production style where heavily produced background vocals and stuff like that. And it's just one of those songs that just kind of stick out like a sore thumb, you know? At least on the record, you have a couple of moments where you have one or two or three songs that are kind of in the same category, but then all of a sudden you have this one that kind of stands out. And then you go back to this here. There's just no glue in this record. And that's what kind of, I think, hurts it.
Yeah, I'll never deny Hot in the Shade. You know, I did my episode on Read My Body and some of my thoughts around that one. But Hot in the Shade, I still have fond memories of 15 new Kiss songs. 15! Mm. You know, that was a lot of new music to jam onto a single LP as well. But with living in Singapore at the time that came out, to have Hot in the Shade, to have Smashes, Thrashes, and Hits, I played the shit out of that as well, even those dreadful new songs in hindsight, and Trouble Walking, to have all of those in 89 in Singapore. They made being in Singapore a little bit easier on this poor guy.
But Julian, you never explained how you ended up in Singapore.
I think he has.
I don't remember how the hell did he end up in Singapore. Yeah, but why did you live there?
The flight ended.
Yeah.
Okay. Just jumped off the flight and
jumped out of the plane. Apparently,
Singapore. It feels so.
No, my parents had split years earlier, and from about 1980 on, my father was a management consultant in Singapore. And come the end of high school, we were off the rails as kids, and my mom had had enough of us. So I was given the choice of boarding school in England with my basically living with my grandparents, or going to Singapore to live with my father to finish school. So I couldn't bring myself to torture my grandparents with my behavior. So I figured go to Singapore and get back at the guy. You know, so I was out there the summer of 87 and then from 88 through 90, and I finished high school and stayed on an extra year because of my age. I was 16 when I graduated American high school. So I did my A levels, O levels, to get back on the British path, that first year, and then A levels the following year. All to hopefully set myself up to go to university in, Britain. So,
But don't they speak like Chinese in Singapore?
No, English is the first language. It's a multicultural. It's a true multicultural society where the languages are English, Malay, Hokkien or Chinese was the dialect that was mostly spoken out there, but Mandarin, of course, as well. But English is it's a former British colony.
Yeah,
English is the language of every day. Mm-hmm. So
okay,
and then of course there was Indian also represented. So yeah, again, good experience out there.
Okay,
but it was more fun going into record stores in Singapore and Malaysia and all that shit. But this isn't about my life story. We have more topics.
This is your life.
Yeah, there was a topic. I can't really do it without visuals, so we won't even bother trying. But what's better, the solo album covers or the solo album posters? And if you...
Everybody knows what those look like.
Without the visual references, I guess our audio listeners will have to try and do that in their mind's eye. Mm-hmm. Mark, what's better? The cover or the poster?
Honestly, I've always liked the covers better. I mean, the posters are they're cool, but I always found that the covers had more of an impact on me. Like, I just thought that they turned out fantastic. I loved the way they did that. And years later, I discovered that it was the same guy who did the Rush Fly By Night album cover. I was like, wow, that was an interesting find later on. So yeah, I've always liked, always loved the album. The album covers were something that always touched a very good nerve with me. Yes, and thank you, Brandon, for that. I appreciate that.
Ken,
yeah, it's the album covers. Those are iconic at this point, from paintings. So it's quite a different type of painting when you go from those covers to the insert posters are totally comic type, almost paintings, right? I like the idea of they connected them together, tried to puzzle. Though actually, it was kind of a pain in the butt. I remember putting the bump on my wall, and I was like, "Oh shoot! I wish they just kind of made them, squared them off and didn't have the pointy, where you had to connect them. Because otherwise, if you put it by itself, it kind of looks like, it doesn't work by itself. You have to connect them all." So anyway, that was just a thing when in 1978 I was like, I didn't like it when they did that, but whatever. They're okay, but the cover is iconic, like I said.
Yeah, Sylvie nailed it. The covers are legendary. To me, the covers are iconic. I nearly said ironic. But the covers, I did see the original painting for one of them, and I was surprised. I thought it'd be bigger. You know, it made me think of the Glissé print that Paul did for his kind of rendition of the cover art years ago that they gave us on the Kiss Cruise. I just want to go to Chris Flood. Did I ever spit out gum in Singapore? I don't chew gum to begin with. It's a disgusting habit that leaves people looking like fucking donkeys. So wow. I'm not a gum chewer. I despise that crap. I didn't do chewing tobacco either. But I'm not going to talk about the crimes that I did break in Singapore. But let's put it this way. Only Michael Fay got busted. Daniel.
Well, album covers. We all know what we're doing next episode. Me, Ken, and Mark are chewing gum through the episode.
I have some chewing gum.
We need to do that, guys. Okay. We need to do that. But when it comes to the covers and the posters, I think the posters, they were a great compliment to the albums, album covers. I think it was great to have both, you know, the serious covers and that comic feel in the posters. And the idea that you could put all four posters together and get, you know, like a huge poster. That's a great idea. So it was really thought out. And I have to go with the covers, of course, there. That's excellent art. And you said you felt that when you saw the original, it felt a bit small. Well, when I was in Paris and first time I saw the Mona Lisa, that's like like this.
Yeah.
So that was the same feeling.
You know, what's interesting, too, is if you look online, there's a I saw this page where you can get the poster images, but they're all just in black and white drawn. So I remember I had them printed out, all four of them, and I just recolored them and redone them in my own way without referring to the other one. So you can make your own kind of interesting version of those posters if you find the original black and white drawings of it online.
Yeah, Chris, the canings aren't public in Singapore. Don't fall for fake news. The posters were done by David Edward Byrd, who passed away, I believe, this year. And Tim did a great interview for the solo album book. It's up on the Kiss Concertography site for anyone who wants to read it. And he talked about the rush to do the posters and in having one of the other art students help out with those as well, whereas Eduardo Caragotti was an old school artist who really took his time, especially putting the blood on that. And just the stories that go with the creation of those covers, just fantastic. Again, something so visually appealing. Daniel, you had something?
Yeah, I have a question for you, Julian. Why the heck did they make a cover for Eric Carr in a similar vein? Later on, they made a cover for Eric Carr.
A painting of that.
In 1980.
Why? Why do you think they did that?
I thought it was to welcome him in and make him feel like a member of the band, like getting in the car later that year. And in perhaps chance that they ever did one, I get the feeling it was more just about inclusivity. Okay. That's a very dangerous word to use in this country these days. But in making him feel a part of the band and giving him his own, again, the treatment of the first new character, what better way than to have it rendered in the same form as the 1978 covers?
It doesn't sound like an idea from Paul.
Sounds more like
it was Bill.
Paul.
Yeah,
I'd have to look back. I think Loretta probably did an episode on Three Sides where she talked about that, her memories of it. Maybe Kiss and Sell has it as well. But again, Kiss and Sell being one of the preeminent sources for anything. One more topic. And this one on the board goes to Hell in a Handbasket very quickly. And it's, how would you judge Pop House's performance so far? We're basically... 2 years in now to Pop House, though clearly I believe that they hadn't signed on the bottom line, on the dotted line, pardon me, in December 2023 when they had the Avatar preview that most of 24 was spent with nothing happening so that they could sort out the deal. So what is your perception of how Pop House is doing? And by what are you judging it? That was my comment in the thread, was what do people think they're judging Pop House's performance by right now that you can pinpoint our decisions and projects wholly the idea of Pop House rather than leftovers from pre-Pop House such as Gold Singles and God knows what else. I'm going to start with the Scandinavian first. Let's give home team advantage to Scandinavia. Daniel, how do you judge it?
Well, I think initially they had some problems. Who's in charge of this? What can we do? And there was quite some time before they actually got to do stuff. So, but now you start to see things happening. You know, recently we got two box sets, brilliant box sets. They look great. So I think they are starting to get the hang of it, you know. So I think we can expect a whole lot in next year as well. I think they the thing that they did with those, you know, the fan experts, so to speak, is a great thing that KISS never thought of, really. You know, bring in experts from all around the globe, Italy, Sweden, America, Canada, and, you know, do sort of, you know, what do you call that when people get together and think about stuff?
Brainstorm?
Yeah, exactly. It's like a brainstorm. Do that with people who know what to do. And I think the fans are the experts at this point in time. Gene and Paul, they don't know what people want anymore. And it's pretty obvious that they have sometimes, you know, no idea what we expect. But bring in the super fans and listen to them. And then you create stuff together with the KISS Army. I think that's the way to go.
Mark.
Honestly, I don't know enough about Pop House to give a really educated answer to it, but I'm going to say this. I find I'm kind of confused about how they're doing, because when Daniel, for example, brought up that the box sets came out, I was always under the assumption that Universal Music Group were involved with that and thought that was their baby, not Pop House, because Universal Music owned the rights to that stuff. I don't think Pop House does to that stuff, so I don't know how much involvement they have
in
it.
Can I interrupt you quickly?
Sure.
It's basic music business that Universal owns the rights to the music, but Gene and Paul own the rights to the writing, you know, so the two parties have to work together. Universal can't just do things because of the previous existing contracts. I'm not going to be exact on it, but they have to work together. So where Gene and Paul had to approve box sets previously, Pop House now has that position, is my understanding, that they have a right to say, a right to refuse, you know, certain things that may be in Universal's vaults. So Universal can't just go and do whatever they want with anything that hasn't previously been approved. So they can reissue Animalize to their heart's consent or Hot in the Shade in that form or in a similar form, different color, like a pink vinyl. So
I'm just saying that as far as, you know, basic, saying that it's basic business, I disagree, because when it comes to contracts and having seen enough and having a lawyer as well involved in a lot of stuff that I've done, there's no such thing as a basic anything when it comes to music stuff. There's all kinds of loopholes and, you know, revision 0.5, 0.6 and all kinds of shit. I guarantee you we don't know half of the shit that's in contracts that they have. I know you've seen a lot of them, but who knows what's happening with them now? I mean, like you said, well, I thought that when Paul and them sold their stuff, they sold their stuff. You know what I mean? So isn't this now more just like a courtesy thing to get them involved more now? I mean, if you're selling something, then you're out, right?
I haven't seen the Pop House contract. I've read the 73, 75, 76, 77, 80, 83, stuff, 2012.
Right? Yeah, but that's old. Well, that's old news.
No, because those contracts are binding to the material that was recorded under them. So
yeah, okay, but when they sign it,
so Universal hasn't. You have to also remember that Pop House is partnered with Bravado. Except it's like one big circle jerk. the whole situation with that is a horrendous circle of you know, tie-ins. But in terms of the basic premise that someone cannot just release music without the permission of the artist, that comes into play.
Okay, so I'll just leave it with this, saying that I don't know enough about Pop House's involvement and what they do to give it a good or bad rating. I'll just say that I'm undecided. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, for me, well, you know, Pop House, if you watch that interview with Tom Germain on, you know, that recent one on the box sets from Kiss My Wax, check it out. He does say they kind of, once that was all said and done, the signing and all that, they, Pop House kind of just said, keep doing what you're doing, kind of thing. And so they're going to continue the box sets as far as, you know, producing those in the future, the plan. But the stuff that bothers me, I think, is kind of clueless, is these, you know, it's, and this is going to be Pop House, you know, allowing, you know, $1,000 underwear kind of with a Kiss logo on it and stuff like that. I mean, that stuff is just, some of that is just ridiculous. You know, the average fan is not going to buy that. And I don't know who's going to buy that, actually, if you're not a fan. It's just, or you have money to just waste, I guess, then you may buy that. So that kind of stuff is, to me, is kind of clueless, of the branding part of things. And that's what they own, is the brand. The other part is, yes, I don't understand how they still do not give any updates on where they are in this Avatar thing. It's either they're so far behind, which I think they are. I don't think it's coming in. Originally, they said 2027. I still don't see it happening. And if they got to build a facility in Las Vegas, that takes time too, to put this thing. The whole thing, I think it's a little bit more difficult than they thought. Yeah, I think they can. I know there's been talk about, there is some people were shown images in Las Vegas about a picture of Paul Stanley, a real photo of him, and then another of a likeness created digitally or whatever, I don't know, using the software, and people couldn't tell the difference. If they're using that kind of,
Did it move, or was it just a fucking picture?
If it didn't move,
I mean, and you could get Michelangelo to draw a picture of Paul Stanley and have everyone blown away by how good it is. But if
you haven't moved the same, I'm sure you could probably do it. But you know, until we see something, I don't know what I'm. You know, I'm not expecting much. I just think they should give updates on where they're at and show, like, oh, you know, put out a video or something saying, look at, this is what we're doing. This is the progress. This is what we're looking to, you know, improve on, or I don't know, show some kind of thing to make you excited for something that's coming down the road. And maybe they're
meaning more transparency when it comes to what they're
more
doing.
Transparency. Maybe maybe their thought is, this is going to be so good, we're just going to blow them away when we put it out. It's just going to be, you know, mind blowing. Well, agreed. I hope it is mind blowing. I hope it is.
You nailed it right there with it. It's going to be mind blowing when it comes out, and I think that
one way or the other is going to be mind blowing.
Well, there aren't. I think that's why there aren't updates for it, because there was such a reaction. I mean, the reaction to December 2023 really spanned the gamut between those who are like, "Oh, this is really cool," and those who were, "What the? You know, leave it right there." So, again, it's a very dangerous. Maybe they don't want to update until there's something significant to update, because that gets you, that buys you a pass with all KISS projects. It's magical how that works.
Yeah.
Magic.
So I can see why they wouldn't want to give updates about it, and why they might just, Sylvie, thank you for confirming that it was just a picture of Paul, you know, to keep it in a very close, you know, a participant event where people have paid the dollar, you know, to go to Vegas to show them, you know, this is what it looks like. Well, that to me is very misleading, because that doesn't translate into it looking like the you know, James Cameron level avatars. But then again, technology is moving on, but so is business. And, you know, how does what's happening this year with everyone losing their jobs and being replaced by AI, you know, affect animation studios as well? And the technology is coming on with leaps and balances with the, you know, the industrialization of the AI farms into powerhouse to have the compute power to generate whole new levels of artificial videos. I mean, just look at all the deepfakes and how those are coming along. Yeah. How does that translate into what they started using at the beginning of the project with the level of technology that's available 2 years later, or three? Or perhaps they'll start working 6 weeks out with technology where it'll be by the end of 2026 at this rate. So,
and also there's a backlash to, you know, AI. People are getting offended and irritated about AI. And when it started, people were so excited. Now people hate it.
Well, now they've lost their jobs.
It's not only that because it's an overload of, you know, animated stuff. I can't look at those ever, you know, those films by James Cameron, Avatar. It feels like I hate, you know, avatars going around. I'm put off at least of it. So people want, I think it will go back. People want the real thing. People would want humanity. We don't want to go Terminator 2.
Well, no, but AI is being jammed down our throats. You look at your browser. You've got multiple plugins for AI does this, Copilot. They're trying to put AI in freaking Microsoft Notepad. Meanwhile, the rest of their kernel is shit, and your system crashes, won't cut and paste, can't go between screens because they keep jamming in AI and having AI write code for AI. So people have lost their jobs because of AI, and now people are losing their ability to even participate in commerce because of AI. For anyone who follows tech news, Crucial pulling out of the memory market has left people who build computers unable to buy memory. All the memory is being sold to AI farms. And same with GPU computes all going to AI farms. So now hobbyists can't build a new computer because they can't afford a GPU. They can't get RAM. I bought memory for my system in July this year. I looked at the spot price of that same memory package, and it was four times what I paid for it because of AI. So why don't you tell me what the fuck AI is doing for my life to make it better?
I have a perfect example from class this week. You know, some of the boys in fourth grade are starting to get into KISS. I think I have something to do with that. But then I said, I want you to see a new video from KISS. Oh, they were all excited. You know, they stayed after class just to see that. And I put on War Machine. Have you seen that AI video of War Machine?
Yeah.
I think it's pretty cool. That was good. And the first thing one of the guys said, oh, it's AI. I don't care for that. So, you know, he's 10 years old and he's already tired of AI.
Yeah, because it's getting crammed everywhere on my YouTube.
It's not the
channel,
real KISS.
There's every second thing is AI this, AI that, animals into AI characters and into heroes and this, and it's a total overload. That's the main problem. As soon as you get that happening, people get sick of this stuff really quickly.
But then again, I'm a bit of a hypocrite with my rant about AI and the impacts of it, because I used AI this week to translate German articles into English. I used AI this week to separate audio stems and to then work and manipulate them to do the Forever song story on the members channel. Used AI to create a thumbnail. Generic one. So again, AI as a tool has its place, just like morphine has a place. Again, AI has become the opiate of the AI has become the opiate of the masses, where it has become an addiction that invades all aspects of being. And, you know, again, how is a reaction against what is happening in the broader world going to affect the avatars? Because that it has a very strong tie-in with AI tools. I'm concerned there's going to be a backlash, at least the riots in the street with pitchforks over AI, and projects like the avatars that rely on it, or legitimate projects, are going to almost become poison pilled by their reliance on it. So again, there's so much more to say.
Yeah, but talking about projects, I mean, people out there are wondering, and we are as well, you know, you have a few projects going on, Julian, and that's what's, I guess, unique about this podcast, is that we have one of the most famous KISS authors of all time in our crew here, and that's Julian, and he has, you know, I think it's like 3 books in the making. Can we get an update?
Daniel does this every week.
The fans crave it. Fans crave it. I mean, now it's like a month ago since I last did it.
Daniel craves it.
There's a lot of others that craves it as well.
Aceland's on hold. Okay. We're working. Well, we can't have anything designed because we have too many sections that we just have a couple of people that we're hoping to finally wrap up. We basically are hoping for a drop-dead date for text finalization at the end of the year. And after that, it's just design. There have been a few meetings around that, but nothing significant to report. I do have this on my desk, which should tell you everything you need to know about what I was working on last night. Updated 30 pages in here. Last night and this morning, so that's still on track for next year. But again, I've talked about some of the federal government issues that are now impacting libraries and the ability to get interlibrary loan in the United States. Those have just gotten worse. I had 5 requests to my library in the past couple of months for newspapers, and now they're not even being rejected; they're just being ignored. So I've got gaps that I can't fill without my microfilm. While I sometimes am able to work around those, again, if I can't get the microfilm to go through and do pure research, then I can't fill those pages in. All right, so that was Magic. That's Aceland. War Machine. I did write the final section that I needed to write. But right now I'm analyzing the text and moving things around and making sure everything – that takes the longest part. Writing's easy. The making it good, or making it as good as possible so it's not filled with typos and shit. And then I just need to do a gap analysis to make sure that the things that I simply can't fill for War Machine are done. I gotta do a pop house thing with that because of the cover art using makeup design. There's some business to get through first, and then Dynasty book. That one's coming along. Nice. Similarly, that's a little behind, but again, I don't have timelines for any of these. What else is there? Oh, there's the Audio Odyssey companion book. which has all the memos and shit that weren't in Odyssey. The next chapter
of that. There was one more, wasn't there?
What's the other one? I do have a Destroyer one going, and if that's done in time for the Destroyer Tour 50th anniversary, then that'll go out. But again, if none of these make the mark, they don't go out. And the only one I care about going out is Aceland.
But I got to say, the song series thing that Julian's doing is fantastic. The latest one is brilliant. So listen to it if you haven't had a chance yet.
That was just a song of the moment. That's not even a song story or a demo story. So that's just
it was really good.
I just waffle about the song and then play the song.
I enjoyed that thing you did about Rise to It. No, not Rise to It. What the hell is the name of that song that you hate?
Rise to it. Read my body.
Read my body.
Yeah.
I like that. Just off the cuff, you know, going crazy about a song or a subject on the message board. And that's, you know, the power of the KISS FAQ podcast. We also have the board where Julian can, you know, pick a topic, and, you know, just write it. I think that's a cool idea.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I can't.
Oh, yes, it is.
Without some notes. All right, that's it. That's our show for this week. Daniel got his updates. So
thank you.
There's been a shit ton of activity in Aceland. You'll like what we've been working on of late. I nearly guarantee that people enjoy that. There'll always be one who doesn't, but there we go. All right, that is it for this week. I want to thank everyone who's taken the time to tune in live, and awesome comments as always from everyone. But for now, that was our random episode. We'll see what we may be reporting on Kennedy Center, what actually did happen next week.
Yeah.
And again, there's a lot of very good podcasts coming out. Podcast Rock City, don't forget to check them out. Don't forget The Kiss Room. Don't forget Three Size. Don't forget Shout It Out Loudcast. I'm going to keep these guys holding their hands up like a bunch of Boy Scouts until I need to take a breath and say, that's it for this week. So from Daniel, Mark, Ken and myself, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for spending time listening to the KISS FAQ podcast today. All sales are final. There are no refunds. If you'd like, look us up on Facebook or come over to the message board and discuss the topics we've broadcast today. Don't forget to hit subscribe wherever you've listened to this show, and a like would very much be appreciated. We hope you'll join us again, but until then, remember, life's a radio. Turn it up to 10.